Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the possibility of a military confrontation between China and Japan over a dispute involving small uninhabited islands. Scott Savitt, a former Beijing-based foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times and United Press International, joins us to discuss the economic fallout already experienced due to the growing tensions between two countries with the world's second and third largest economies. Then we'll assess the likely repercussions from a federal judge's decision to allow the enforcement of the Show Me Your Papers provision in Arizona's controversial immigration law that the Supreme Court recently upheld. Jeff Biggers, the award-winning author of the new book State Out of the Union, Arizona and the Final Showdown Over the American Dream, joins us to discuss the impact that Arizona's hot-button immigration law might have on the November election. Then finally, Hannah Rosen joins us. She's a senior editor at The Atlantic and the founder of Double X, Slate's women's sections, and the author of a new book, The End of Men and the Rise of Women. We will discuss the twilight of the patriarchy as a result of the revolution that feminists have been waiting for, which Hannah Rosen argues is happening now before our very eyes. Joining us now is Scott Savitt, who's a former Beijing-based foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times and United Press International. His forthcoming memoir is about his two decades as an American reporter in China. Welcome to Background Briefing, Scott Savitt.
Thank you.
And there's a possibility of a military confrontation between Japan and China over these disputed islands which are uninhabited. And with naval ships sort of wandering around in the neighborhood, little wonder that U.S. Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta, visiting Beijing, has expressed his concern that things could get out of hand. But what's already happened is that the world's second and third largest economies, because of this dispute, are already suffering. So this could actually turn into a huge problem.
Oh, yeah. It's scary.
And what's your sense of what's driving it, and secondly, what could restrain it?
Well, something interesting is, you know, now I have a little perspective. I went to China as a teenager to study. So 30 years ago, these anti-Japanese protests started, and they've just been going on periodically. It's very interesting because people try and argue now, oh, this is something the Chinese government can't control. That's nonsense. This is very much being stirred up by people behind the scenes. You know, what their objective is more difficult to know. And that's the reason that the Japanese just stay very quiet and these things blow over. And it looks like the Chinese government already started giving a signal to put on the brakes today. They basically just open up the steam vent, let people go out and blow off steam in a safe direction against, you know, their nemesis, the Japanese, and then they just go back to business as usual.
Well, how much is this being orchestrated by a faction within the government because of the Maoist posters and all of that? You get the impression.
Well, the Mao is different. See, carrying Chairman Mao, that was done in Tiananmen in 1989. That's a rebuke of the president. Governors of China, because Chairman Mao was the great revolutionary that these guys just couldn't hold a candle to. So by holding up posters of Chairman Mao, they're telling their present leaders, you know, this was a real leader. And it's so important to understand these are all shadow plays and, you know, including putting people out on the street. Yeah, it's most likely it is some kind of factional jockeying, but only very, very inside. I mean, I have high-level contacts, and these things are so convoluted that even on the inside of the Communist Party, it's not that easy to know everything that's going on behind the scenes. But presumably, you know, if you say, who does it benefit, this is hardliners saying, you know, we need to be tough on all fronts. You know, unfortunately, China's actions in the South China Sea have, or the South Sea, as they, you know, the other countries like to call it, it's really backfired. I mean, by bringing the United States in, you know, to basically state unequivocally that we will honor our military alliance with, you know, not just Japan, but several of these countries involved. And it's China, they've really painted themselves into a corner with, well, that's the view of a lot of scholars or, you know, knowledgeable people that I talk to.
Well, Scott Savitt again, a former Beijing-based foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times and United Press International. This has followed, of course, the so-called disappearance from public view of the vice premier, Xi Jinping. He's, of course, resurfaced with Leon Panetta. Panetta, of course, is in a difficult position because the U.S., as you mentioned, has the treaties with Japan in particular, but also extensive trade with China, not to mention the fact that China subsidizes our standard of living by continuing to buy our debt. So there's quite a dance going on here. I guess the real question is, as crazy as it sounds, over these uninhabited islands that apparently belong to a Japanese family that were then the government of Japan just bought, or at least the Tokyo prefecture just bought, and now that's caused the sacking and the looting of shops and burning of factories, etc., in China. I guess the real question is, what confidence do you have that this can be restrained? If somebody's stirring the pot, and I imagine it might, as you mentioned, it's probably conservative circles or even military circles, what's the countervailing restraint there? The civilians still have control over the military, do they not, in China?
Yeah, I mean, presumably. You know, just a couple of details. So, you know, they're not just fallow rocks or nobody would be doing this. There's probably significant oil deposits, and that's what this is really about. So that's the first thing. And the second one is, I have great confidence that it will be reined in because I've watched it happen so many times before. Really, if you go back and look, this has been a regular occurrence, you know, every few years for the past, we always say 3 decades because that's basically the period of the post-Mao economic, you know, that's when the economic reforms started to take root. So everybody that does this has seen, you know, this is on a larger scale. They're playing with fire, you know, the Communist Party leadership. You let this many people go out on the street, and who's to say that one day it doesn't, you know, start turning against them, which is why there's such large police presences. And, you know, I've been told that the government even provides the eggs being thrown at the Japanese embassy, and that wouldn't surprise me at all.
There have been reports that patriotic businessmen paid for buses to bring people from the provinces.
Yeah, it's always the case. You know, this happened, you know, okay, so when I was a foreign correspondent based in Beijing, I had to live in the diplomatic compound with, you know, all the foreign diplomats, you know, except the ambassadors would have residences. So I live next door to the American embassy, and when the United States bombed the Chinese embassy in Belgrade in 1999, they basically, they brought the buses, they gave them the buses, they brought the students, and they basically walked by and they handed them all a rock and said, here, throw it at that building, the U.S. Embassy. I mean, as orchestrated as possible. And then, you know, then at a certain time, which looks like it's happening now, they turn the spigot off and say, you know, go back to, and obviously things that they don't want protested do not get protested in China. I mean, you know, not without a violent response from the security apparatus. So, you know, that tells you what's going on behind the scenes. I think that it's a sign of desperation, to be quite honest. You know, it's very difficult for the Chinese Communist Party to continue business as usual. You know, apparently they rule by committee, and I just think that's increasingly difficult to do in these modern, you know, information societies. So I think this is a sign of things to come. And, you know, everybody talked about them handling this leadership transition that's coming up smoothly. I mean, this isn't what I would call smooth.
Again, I'm speaking with Scott Savitt, who's a former Beijing-based foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times and United Press International. His forthcoming memoir is about his 2 decades as an American reporter in China. Now, when you say that things aren't behind the scenes, that things aren't working out well for the leadership in transition, obviously much was made of the so-called disappearance of the heir apparent who has now reappeared. But there's also the trial, of course, of Bo Xilai's, the police chief involved in covering up the murder of the British businessman. Those trials, of course, are highly orchestrated by the party. What's your reading? Because I know you know a lot of dissidents over there. What's your reading on how the public views the party following all of these scandals?
Oh, you know, my view has been since they basically had to come in with you know, tanks and troops in 1989 and, you know, carry out a massacre in the heart of their capital. Basically, their legitimacy has been based on the ability to kill people. And, you know, if you really allowed Chinese people to express their will, I don't think that these are the people they would pick to lead them. So, you know, we'll see how this turns out. But this is now the fifth generation leadership. And, you know, the Soviet Union didn't survive past a fifth generation. And it's getting very difficult. The guys who are coming into power now, they, for the first time ever, no personal military experience. And it looks like the Bo Xilai case was the first time that somebody said, hey, wait a second, you know, I'm going to go off the reservation. And that's the kind of thing that I think that you're going to see more of in the period to come.
Meaning what, Scott Savitt, that the country will break up into economic fiefdoms?
No. I mean, you know, the best model is how it happened in the Soviet Union. You know, you had a Gorbachev, but then, you know, ultimately you had a Yeltsin. And, you know, it finally the fissures within the party came out into the open. And that's long been my prediction about China, because that's what took place in 1989, is that, you know, you do essentially have, you know, you have a lot of patron-client relationships, but you basically have a, you know, a hardline faction and a more reformist faction, and they've managed to, like I say, rule by committee. But, you know, challenges will inevitably come, and, you know, where you had a Yeltsin standing off against a, you know, a threatened military coup, all these kinds of scenarios are very, very possible in China. No, it doesn't mean the country breaks up. I mean, that's not inevitable at all. I mean, the economy essentially runs itself. It, you know, this party stuff is almost grafted on the top. So you could make big, important national decisions, which they're, you know, this rule by committee, by most accounts, doesn't do very well.
Well, the fact that the world's second largest economy and third largest economy are loggerheads, and already there's been a dip in the Japanese share prices for Nissan, which fell 5%, Honda dropped 2.5% just over these disputes. And the world, in effect, it depends upon China's economy growing, and it's shrinking because of this. You know, the markets in Europe are drying up because of the euro crisis, the tremendous overcapacity. And my understanding about the Chinese government is that they really got to keep these economic growth rates up high in order to keep everybody satisfied, to keep a lid on what's bubbling over.
Sure. I mean, you know, that's the pressure that they have. And but this just goes to show that if, you know, but people used to say, oh, they'll never do this or never do that because of economic interests. Economic interests take a far, far second place to what's going on politically. And, you know, this kind of thing of, you know, you could start to tease out some kind of objective in whose interest is it to harm, you know, economic growth numbers at the leadership transition period. And, you know, who knows if that's not some part of the motivation. But this is a little bit of a hiccup. I mean, you know, the economic performance, China's facing, you know, difficult structural reforms. I'm talking in the economy right now that are also completely separate from this. So the bigger issues never go away. But yeah, I mean, you know, it is playing with fire to let this man. And, you know, I don't know if you saw, but what just happened is the mob, because the Japanese embassy is right next to the American embassy, and the U.S. ambassador, his car was surrounded and damaged by the protesters. So that happened today, and you know, that's a little scary. You know, what happens if the U.S. ambassador gets, you know, something happens to him in China? Then what do we do?
So, Scott Savitt, you mentioned Tiananmen, which you witnessed back in 89, and that came about because of a split between the hardliners and the reformists led by Zhao Zheng, and actually the whole student occupation of Tiananmen was in memorial to Hu Yaobang, right, who was a revered progressive leader, along with the president at the time, who was also very progressive. And are there any people like that in the mix now? Is there a...
Yeah, there are. I mean, what's interesting is actually it's the children of the people who were involved, well, some of the same individuals. You know, the outgoing premier right now was the party general secretary, Zhao Jiang's secretary at the time, top staff person. And the son of Hu Yaobang, the person whose death sparked the 1989 demonstrations, he's playing a very prominent role. Basically, it's you could say that the leaders in 1989, they started the market economic reforms first, but they always intended to reform the political structure. And that's essentially been put on hold for, you know, the past 23 years and counting since 1989. But it needs to take place. So, you know, there's some indication that so Xi Jinping, the heir apparent, the guy who will be, you know, named the Communist Party chief and the army chief at the leadership transition in a month. He met recently with the son of Hu Yaobang, Hu Deping, and they claim that the information that's come out of the meeting is that there's a reform agenda emerging, but it's just so difficult to put through because there are so many vested interests now. So these are going to be some tough years ahead. But structurally, the Chinese economy, everyone recognizes it needs to go through some big changes, just like we do.
Just in closing, Scott Savitt, when the Chinese defense minister, who's standing next to the U.S. Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, when he says that they hope to resolve this dispute over these islands peacefully, but they reserve the right to take further action if Japan does not correct its mistakes, that sounds like you're asking concessions from the Japanese. It may not happen.
It's for show. I mean, it's for domestic consumption. No Chinese, you know, government or party leader, military leader can afford to look weak in front of their own people. But there's no substance to it. Nothing has changed. And, you know, ultimately, the Chinese position has been that these are all negotiable. And they just prefer to negotiate bilaterally, and the U.S. is basically taking the side that they should be multilateral negotiations with ASEAN and Japan. And anyway, I mean, it's, you know, typical negotiation over a territorial dispute. But I mean, a shooting war, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Guess what? China might not win one. They, you know, this generation, they don't have anyone in their military that has any relevant military experience. They don't even know what would happen if they, you know, they took the covers off. That's the biggest concern of all, really, and the biggest reason why it's not going to happen.
Well, Scott Savitt, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Scott Savitt, who's a former Beijing-based foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times and United Press International. His forthcoming memoir is on his 2 decades as an American reporter in China. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the Show Me Your Papers state, Arizona.
Thank you.